Am I the only one that thinks that's the coolest version of We Three Kings I've ever heard? Christmas brings out the child in us. We tell and retell the story of Jesus' birth, and somehow envisioning that baby, the peril and the wonder of it all, invites us to be kids again. We read picture books in front of the fire. We set out cookies and milk for a very old elf. We eat sweet things and drink bubbly concoctions and dance on the rug in our stocking feet. Even the most dignified folks have spent some time in the last few days singing songs, playing games, or sitting on the floor surrounded by paper and bows. I know, I've seen your Facebook and Instagram feeds. I've been surprised by a couple of you. Cynics would call all this fuss nostalgia, a sentimental journey toward a perfect Christmas that never really was. And they have a point. I love plenty of people who've gotten lost at the holidays, drunk or angry or both, unwilling to face the grief that drives them and their families to distraction. But that sort of childishness is different from the awe that the child within us brings to the manger and hears in the story of God coming home. The veil is thin between God and children. Can you hear with their ears this season in the wonder that comes before the hurt or the hatred has shut us down? Can you see what they see, that the boy washing the windshield is in their grade at school? Do you know what they know, that a homeless prince of peace embodies more authority than any frightened king threatening violence? Do you remember the story of the 5-year-old child who asked to be left alone for a minute with his baby sister? His parents were understandably worried at first. Was the bigger boy jealous at being displaced by his younger sibling? Would he try to hurt her? Was it safe to leave them alone? But the parents let the older boy have his time with the baby, and then they stood outside the room just in case. And much to their surprise, what they heard the 5-year-old say was this: "Jenny, please help me to remember what God is like. I'm starting to forget." Are we? The wise men are also trying to unravel the mystery of life. They'd searched the ancient books of wisdom, they'd studied the stars, they'd plotted and planned, and yet they almost missed the epiphany unfolding in front of them. The Magi were most likely high-ranking political advisors to the rulers of their countries, modern-day Iraq and Iran. So it makes sense that they would make their way to Jerusalem, the capital city, to confer with King Herod. But it turns out the one they were seeking was 9 miles away in a backwater town named Bethlehem. And when their wandering led them to a poor baby, born of parents in questionable circumstances from a small tribe of people whose prophets spoke of beating their swords into plowshares, and of welcoming the stranger as a holy visitor, well, the wise men were shocked to find in this one the goal of their quest. Some translations say they were overwhelmed. Others read overjoyed. I imagine, no wonder they say that the star that they follow was rising. An old Jewish story tells us of a rabbi who asked his disciples, "How do you know when the night is giving way and the morning is coming?" One of the people stood and said, "Teacher, won't you know that night is fading when through the dim light you can see an animal and recognize that it's a sheep or a dog?" The rabbi answered, "No." "Rabbi," said another, "won't you know that dawn is coming when you can see clearly enough to distinguish whether a tree is a fig or an olive?" "No," responded the teacher. Rather, he said, "You will know that the night has passed when you can look at any man and at any woman and discern that you are looking at a brother or a sister. And until you can see with clarity that all families are one and that the person you hurt or who hurts you is a cousin, and that even an enemy can be a friend, until that time, the night will still be with us. A light dawned for those royal visitors as they knelt in their sumptuous clothing at that impossibly humble cradle. In their partisan and parochial world, where Christians and Jews and later Muslims continue to kill each other, where rockets were launched as recently as last week, the wise men saw the ancient prophecy revealed in this child, that the Prince of Peace who unites us is the one who gives us common cause. In W.H. Auden's poem, For the Time Being, they say it this way: to discover how to be human now is the reason we follow this star. We follow this star to discover how to be human, and we need to do that now as much as they did then. Given their revelation, it comes as no surprise that the Magi left for their own country by another road, according to Matthew's gospel. On a certain level, the wise men were simply being careful as they traveled. One or more of them had an unsettling dream that suggested that they better not retrace their steps on their journey home. They better avoid any kind of contact with the unsettled and unsettling leader, Herod. The wise men have told him that they are in search of a, quote, shepherd king, which is a striking vision of power with and power for, wielded for the good of the many, which Herod responds to with fear and lies and a plot designed to terrify those who oppose him. No wonder they revised their travel plans. Consider further who they are and from where they come. These counselors are learned philosophers who have journeyed from the East, the so-called Fertile Crescent, whose civilizations and libraries and religions are much older than those of the Hebrew people whom they encounter in Bethlehem. They've followed a star, traveling for many months through the desert in the dark, carrying symbolic gifts for the one who would be king. Now, no doubt they had a pretty good idea of who and what they would find. But the king that they discover is seemingly powerless and certainly vulnerable and poor. He has animals nosing around him, and he was born in a borrowed barn. Of course the wise men will go home by another way. Everything they were counting on and looking for has been turned on its head. I imagine they expected the king that they would find to conform to their assumptions, to embody their sense of the way things are, some version of, you know, it might make right, or only the strong survive, or God favors those who are powerful, or beautiful, or wealthy, or married, or male, or righteous, or something like that. That's what they were looking for. And they knew that any proper king would know exactly what to do with the frankincense and the myrrh and the gold that they carry. But to the wise men's surprise, the star that they've been following illumines the darkest, deepest mystery of God. That true power is discovered in the crucible of vulnerability. That wisdom is born of pain. That strength comes from embracing the margins, accepting who and what you don't know, with having a beginner's mind like a child which wants to grow and change because that's what minds and hearts want to do, and discovering that gold is only a means to an end, a vehicle to promote the common good primarily rather than to enrich any individual or particular group. Do you hear me? That's what they discovered. They went looking for one thing and they found something entirely different. No wonder they went home another way. I'm not surprised the wise men take another route home after they realize in that stable scene that the God of the universe is fully present in our decidedly fragile human flesh. I'm not sure they even know where home is after that. These visitors from the East who are quite literally disoriented. And being lost in this way, I believe, is the best thing that ever happened to them. and it's the best thing that ever happened to us. Because when we can see and hear and know that God is in our flesh, that God is in our being and in each other, when we can look at any man or any woman, any Jew or any Muslim, any Iraqi or any Iranian or Baltimorean, and see our brother and sister or child or mama, well, then we'll be traveling a new way home as well. And we'll be different people as we travel too. According to Martin Smith, what met the wise men at Bethlehem was the mystery of divine creativity itself, which cannot be usurped or deflected, the uncontrollable mystery of God's strength revealed through engaging vulnerability. That's not what they expected to find. What met them was the mystery of compassion, of suffering with, of leadership like they'd never imagined, of a shepherd king who brings every single lost sheep to the center of the party. That's not what kings usually do. They were looking and they found this new vision of a shepherd king. Somebody that doesn't just lead like this, but leads like this. Here is the uncontrollable mystery of love, which cannot be bought or sold or seduced, present in all of its fullness in this newborn baby. With all of that wonder, those dignified folks must have wanted to kick off their shoes and dance in their stocking feet and clink a glass of something bubbly, don't you think? And it makes me think that maybe they didn't really present their tributes to the Christ child after all, the way the paintings seem to picture it. Maybe instead they took all the ways that their worldly wealth imprisons them. And they took all the ways that their narrow worldview hinders their sight. They took all of their sure predictions and pat answers and all the stuff that contributes to their being lost, and they dropped all that on the floor amidst the other straw, so that their hands were free to hold each other and the baby. Godhead here in hiding, whom I do adore, masked by these bare shadows, shape and nothing more. See, Lord, at thy service, low lies here a heart lost, all lost in wonder at the God thou art. You see, God is born among us and lives in us and heals the world through us, through these hands and these hearts. No wonder the wise men took another way home. They were lost like us. And now we're all found. Amen.